ask God for guidance in your healing. When there is a feeling of it's not being right, you will feel a certain nervousness. But when there's a feeling of it's being right, there will be this sort of soaring joy. I don't think I can convey the way it feels to you. It's something that you have to experience for yourself. But once you've experienced it a few times, you begin to know the difference between it feels so good, it's got to be right, and it's all your emotions, and this sort of deep thing that it's something to be very respectful of. You must be very aware of your ability to be wrong, of your capacity for self-deception, not in order to paralyze your willpower and your faith, but in order to constantly fine-tune your faith so that you can attune it to the right flow. Not to tell yourself, oh, I failed again, I can't ever learn this, but rather to say, well, weeding this out, where is the real way of doing it? If you really want to be good at something, you must realize that it takes a lot of energy. I was talking to Bill last night about how to edit, how to splice a tape. And I was talking about how I had edited a talk of mine where I wanted, for example, to take a T out of a word like don't. Or, well, you couldn't take a T out of don't and make any sense, but can't, let's say. And you take the T out and it becomes can. But I was trying to edit it to take out little sounds like that. And what I found was, or in editing music, I would try to add onto a piece of music that had been cut off another piece that was dying out. First time I spliced it, it started to die out, and then it got the full volume again. So I had to keep slicing the tape a little at a time until it was exactly the same volume as that part that I was putting it onto, in order to make it seem as if it was dying out in a proper echo instead of just being choked. And the thing to do then is to keep putting each piece that you cut onto the board there in exactly the same sequence, so that you can add as many little strips of tape. And I was working with slower tape, so that it was little tiny pieces, just that big sometimes, even smaller. But when I had it right, it worked. And you'd never have known the difference. And the thing is, the patience that you need, the energy that you need to have that kind of patience, this is a very important part of whatever you're trying to do, that you need the energy, but energy is not always a full blast. Energy is very often that sustaining power that through all the difficulties you just keep pushing, and nobody is going to be able to be good at anything who doesn't have that kind of patience. Until it's done properly, I can't leave it. And you may have to stay there working for days, but when you've got it, you've got a great victory. Next time it won't be so difficult. I found in writing music it's the same thing, because I haven't studied the science. I haven't studied how to write music. I've never taken courses in it. Or I should say, I took one course in college and never went to class. And the only thing I learned was that parallel fifths aren't good. But the difficulty that I encounter is quite serious, because here I have the inspiration, and in the flow of that inspiration I hit a particular chord, and it seems just almost right, but is it the best? I don't know what chord it is, because I haven't studied this subject. And so I go around trying a few other chords to see if I can hit something just a little bit better. And by the time I try to come back to find the chord that it was so great the first time, I can't find it. It doesn't have a name, it doesn't have a definition, and so it's much harder to get a hold of. Not knowing your tools, it's a great obstacle. But the alternative to that is having enough stick-to-itiveness to get back and find it anyway and not lose your inspiration. This is, of course, now it's easier for me. I've been writing music long enough so that I can find that lost chord more quickly. But it still comes back to whatever you're trying to do. You've got to have that kind of patience that will say, until it's absolutely the best that could possibly be done, it isn't any good at all. I read a book and find one word that was the wrong choice and just shudder. My God, I said that. But it's so important to me that if I'm going to do it, I've got to do it right. And in your healing thing also, don't just sort of have this. Sometimes people treat healing as if it was a little 5-year-old girl at a make-believe tea party with her little cups. Now I'm going to bring a cup up. Now I'm going to pour your tea. And of course, there's no tea in the pot. But, oh, isn't it good? Oh, yum, 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 and so on. All these little happy little children's games. It's all very lovely, and you sort of, you don't want to put it down. But is it doing the job? If you really want to do the job, you've got to take it very seriously, and you've got to say, well, is it working? And if it isn't, how can I make it work better? Test the results of what you're doing. Don't be afraid to face the possibility that you're not doing it right and may have to start all over again. You've got to test what you're doing in the laboratory of results. And too much healing is, oh, well, you should be better, and therefore, what's wrong with you? I certainly put out the energy. Well, sort of reminds me of a friend of mine who was rather an egotist, and he was helping us at an India fair by playing the part of an Indian astrologer. He was Indian, in fact, himself. So he played the part of this Indian astrologer and palm reader, and he looked at somebody's palm, and he says, well, you've had 2 children. And she said, no, I've not had any children at all. He said, are you sure? Oh, yes, absentmindedly, I did forget. I did happen to have 2 children. Or like that classic line in Charlie's Aunt, have you any children, Donna, whatever her name was? No, that is none to speak of. So if you really have, if you really are sincere in wanting to help people, and if you really feel you've got some kind of ability, don't be afraid to test that ability. Don't be afraid to realize that whatever it is, it's something that needs to be developed more and more and more, and not just, well, I can do this and that's enough. And remember, the key to it all is the greater the will, the greater the flow of energy. Now, we want to use our bodies as channels for that energy. There are techniques that Master taught that are helpful in that respect. One is, he said, to concentrate at the spiritual eye, and then think of the spiritual eye of the person you want to heal. If you want to heal people, this is the way I'd advise. There may be other ways of doing it, but I would say, don't think of the disease, think of the healing process. You're not trying to cure or kill the disease, you're trying to strengthen the healing power in that person. So when you visualize this energy, send it from the medulla through this center of will, which is at the point between the eyebrows, into the spiritual eye of the person you want to heal, and let it either fill his whole body or let it go to the part of the body that needs healing. But don't think of the disease there. Think rather of the healing light that you're sending into that part of the body and visualizing that part of the body as being well. I'm reminded of a story that Dr. Lewis used to tell. One time, when he arrived at Mount Washington, he was getting out of the car, and either he or somebody slammed the car door before his fingers had been removed from the door jamb, so that the car door slammed right against all 4 of these fingers. And it just mashed them flat, and it was exceedingly painful. And somebody ran up and told Master about it. Dr. Lewis said that at the moment that Master was apprised of this situation, suddenly it was like a sheet of ice coming down over his consciousness. He couldn't feel his hand anymore. And he just put it inside the lapel of his coat and didn't think about it and didn't look at it. And he left it there for 2 days. And then finally, he didn't feel anything. It was as if something had just come down over his mind. He couldn't feel it at all. And then after 2 days, he felt that the burden had been lifted, it was well, and he pulled it out, and it was perfectly fine. He could use his fingers. They should have been mashed forever, and he could use them perfectly well. I had a similar experience with one time I had a nasal operation, a deviated septum. Master used to say that an operation, you shouldn't operate on anything that makes a straight line down the center of your body. That this is the division between the magnetism of the left and right sides, and that part shouldn't be touched. But I wrote him a letter, and he said, in this case, I feel it would be important, because if you can't breathe out of your left nostril, that too disturbs the balance of the energy flow. That's not what he said. That's what I understood from his saying, in this case, I think it's a good idea. So I went to the doctor, and he gave me a local anesthesia, and I had this submucous resection, as they call it. And then I came home, and about 3 hours later, after the anesthetic had worn off, all the stuffing that he'd put in my nose came out. And we had to call the doctor, and I had to go in again, and he had to push this stuff. Well, you know how sensitive this whole area is. And I could feel perfectly well what he was doing. It's not as if, as in the case of Dr. Lewis, there was that sheet where he couldn't feel at all. I could feel it just as well as if you were doing it to my hand right now. And yet there was no pain involved at all. And I asked the doctor if he could explain it. It was totally beyond him. And then he thought maybe the anesthesia hadn't worn off completely yet. But later, toward the end of the day, it happened again, and I had to call him, and he was just halfway out the door, leaving the office, and he had to come in, and I wait for me, and he did this again, and again, I could feel it perfectly well, but there was no pain. And at this point, he was just, it was totally beyond him. But anyway, that's an interesting story as a sort of a sidelight. But the thing that I was mentioning with Dr. Lewis is more specifically that you, when you're trying to heal, let the whole consciousness cut out the thought of the problem. Let it be totally on a solution. In the principle of superconscious living, a point that I've made very strongly in that whole system is that the conscious mind is problem-oriented. The superconscious mind is solution-oriented. And I found again and again in my life that if I refuse to think about the problem and just am determined to find a solution and know that there's a solution there to be found, that I can find it. But if in the process of finding the solution I keep dragging my mind or letting my mind be dragged back to the problem as a problem, then I find myself going in circles and answers just don't come. They come when I hold the problem up to the superconscious with the absolute intention of finding an answer, not with the intention of what do I do about this heavy thing. When you're trying to heal somebody, similarly, just as Master took that thought of the problem away from Dr. Lewis totally, and he couldn't even feel it. I could feel my nose, I couldn't feel the pain, but he couldn't feel that there was anything, he couldn't feel his hand. It was just there. And then the healing process was able to work. When you give people thoughts like that, and remember your healing is a large part, just you're giving energy to that person and faith to that person that he can be well. There are some people who have a miraculous healing power. I remember a story in the Down School in England about some man who managed to get a hold of a flying carpet. And he didn't know what to do with this flying carpet, but he decided to make a business out of it. And he knew that people, or he quickly discovered that people were really spooked when he took them up on a flying carpet. So he put it in a bus. And they thought it was a bus with a normal motor, but he'd sit there muttering to the carpet, "All right, now let's slow down here for a minute. Okay, start up again." And nobody knew what he was really doing. So with this power, you don't have to make it clear what you're doing, but inwardly you have to always draw on that power when you're trying to help people. Draw it from the superconscious. Always know that this is where your answers come from. And when you're working with people and you're telling somebody that you're well, as I was saying, many doctors have a certain healing power, and people say, "Oh, what a great doctor he is. You ought to go to him." And he even may not be aware that his healing power is not actually coming from the pills that he prescribes. Many doctors are like this. Those that are really good, they may even think that it's because of the medicines that they're prescribing for people. But in fact, they're giving something else. They're giving a certain desire for this person to be healed, a compassion for that person and his needs. And that's what is the the real thing that makes some people good doctors and other people not. Not their ability merely to analyze the problem and prescribe the right kind of cure. This is much more true, of course, for people who do this deliberately and consciously. When you try to work with people, think of the solution. Be solution-oriented. And whatever outward tool you offer, let it be only a tool to sort of channel the energy, focus the energy, awaken it, and then it's the energy itself that takes over and really works. So concentrating on the spiritual eye, sending energy out, these are the techniques, but you know there's a difference between science and art. I made this point at a recent Kriya initiation. The science of a thing is the technique, the method, but very few scientists are able to make a success of the technique. Very few people who go to music school and learn how to play the piano become great pianists. Very few artists who know all the techniques of how to apply paint to a canvas become great artists. The art of the thing is knowing how to use the technique superconsciously, knowing how to bring the inspiration, the solutions, the energy and flow and power from the superconsciousness into what you're doing. So there are a lot of people who know the techniques of healing, but very few people are able to use them very effectively, and always, whoever they are, they can use them more effectively. And this is not technique. This is attuning yourself to that power. It's a certain magnetism, a certain ray of divine grace that you attune yourself to, and then it can flow. Now, that divine power, as a normal human being, rather than a great master whom God has sent into this world to do certain things, that divine power is something that you can generate only to a small degree, probably. But if you attune yourself to a ray that's already there, then, for example, if you will, just as so many people, by using the name of Jesus Christ, have been able to drive out demons. The disciples of Jesus, by using the name of Christ, were able to effect healings. If you will use the power that God has sent into this world through Christ or Master or one of the great ones, you will find that your own power will be greatly augmented, and also they will be able to guide your understanding so that you will be able to use it to the best possible, with the best possible effect. Tune yourself to the masters or to the link that you're trying to draw from and say, use me in this way. And you will find that that power then begins to flow through you in that way. If you ask it in other ways, it will flow through you in other ways. It doesn't mean that everybody who's in tune with that power will be a healer. But those who have that interest, the greater the will, the greater the attunement, the greater the openness, the less the resistance to it in the sense of I can't or whatever, the greater the cosmic awareness of this power as a prototype, rather than just thinking this particular day I'm trying to heal this particular person, the more you're in tune with that great flow as it's channeled through the ray of energy that you're trying to bring into manifestation, the more you will find that you will be able to do wonders for other people and for yourself. Again, I said that it's important to get rid of the sense of I, but not totally. In other words, ego is fine if you use it to channel the energy rather than block the energy. Mankind is more evolved than the animals, and that which separates man from the animals, most specifically of all, is the heightened sense of ego. And what makes that ego necessary for further involvement is that the animals, not having it, when they encounter suffering, just have this vague thought, well, there's something wrong. It's only when you reach the human level that mankind, having a stronger ego, says, I want to do something about it. I don't want to remain in this delusion. I want to grow in wisdom. All this is a good use of ego, without which there's no growth. To offer your ego up into a higher reality is essential for spiritual development. But to block the ego and said, I am that reality, this, of course, is the end of all progress. So don't be afraid of ego, but use it as a tool toward something much greater that has nothing to do with your ego. Use it to channel that power, and when you're channeling that power, know that it's not you who are the power. Your own but God-given power, this will be the effective way of doing it. The midway, the mark between the old classical religious way of God, you do it all, and the new thought thing in religion today, which says, I can do it all. It's your own but God-given power. Between those two opposites, you will find that truth that can make these things actually happen. Now, there's another thing that you can do, and that is, remember I spoke of a crystal or some color or different things. Another thing is your own hands. If you will generate power in your hands and bring attention to them, you will be able to then channel that power through your hands toward whomever you're trying to help. If you will rub your hands together as it's taught, try this with me if you will. Rub your hands together slowly and faster and faster and feel the energy coming in through the medulla. Keep your arms relaxed so that your mind is on the hands themselves. Faster and faster. Now, raise your hands up. Feel the tingling in your hands, this awakening of energy there. Channel through the awareness of that energy, channel more energy through the medulla by your willpower. Lower your hands and send that energy to others. Remember what I said in the beginning, that a channel needs to be opened. If you really want to have any kind of power, you've got to use that power. Use the talents that you're given. Jesus said, if you put it in the ground, then that's not the way to do it. Use it. Use it for more. The more you will use whatever God has given you, or whatever you want Him to give you, the more you will open that channel up so that He will be able to flow more and more perfectly. There are other kinds of healing power that you can draw on. Healing power in the sun, healing power in the elements. In everything that you pick up, there's a gross physical aspect, and then there's a subtle divine aspect. If in everything that you do, you try to touch the divine, you will open yourself to that divine so that you can begin to express it in an outward way through healing. Ultimately, what you want to heal, of course, is your delusions. You want to heal yourself of the greatest disease of all, which is ignorance. And until that disease has been healed, you will get sick again and again because you'll keep on making the mistakes that cause people to get sick. And I think this is a very important point to mention. In a human life, which in this age is relatively short compared to the higher ages, you don't have very much time to do what you're here to do. And if in the time that you spend, you devote all your energy to creating a healthy body, you will have to leave that body sooner or later, healthy or not. And what will you have? If you will concentrate on the cause, not the effect. The cause in this case is the energy, the effect is the body. If you will concentrate on the energy that is producing that body and making it well, then you will be, at the end of that, if you've used that energy to produce a healthy body, but have concentrated on energy as the cause of that health, you will be at least aware of something that you take with you when you leave the physical body, something that can produce a healthy body next time around. But there will be a next time around, because you've still been thinking only of effects of some deeper cause, that deeper cause being, of course, the spirit. And in this length of time that we have in this body, our priority should be to heal ourselves of this delusion that we are separate from God. And nothing else really matters compared to that. Once you've got that, you've got everything. But until you have that, nothing that you have is permanent. And so in a sense, you can say you have nothing. Because even though temporarily with you, when it's gone, it's gone. So devote most of your time to healing your heart. Healing your heart of its indifference to love. Healing your soul of its indifference to joy. Healing your ego of its indifference to humility. Try to develop those attitudes, those insights, that divine flow of energy and joy that will release you from these shackles that otherwise will keep you coming back again and again and again. You'll never have it together until you have yourself together with Him. You'll never have anything unless you realize who you really are. And the thing is that if you can get a wheel right at its center, then in its balance it will always, no matter how fast it turns, be able to turn in a balanced way. But if it's a flywheel turning too fast and off-center, it'll shatter itself into pieces. So once you've gotten yourself centered in the deepest state of all, once you've gotten yourself one with God, then you will find that everything else starts to flow wonderfully too. Your body won't give you any trouble. Your mind won't give you any trouble. Everything you do will in some way just happen as it ought to. When you have love, this power of love flows through your body and heals you of all sorts of things. And if it doesn't, so what do you want to do? Concentrate on less love and more pills? No, the answer is maybe it's a very strong karma, but more love will still cure that too. So increase the flow, increase the love, increase the energy, increase the willpower, increase the wisdom, and everything else. As Jesus said, seek the kingdom of God first, and all these things shall be added unto you. And it doesn't mean to put the things down, but it means to put them in proportion to the broader reality, okay? Let's have a few moments of silence. God will use each person in a different way. You are the one who needs to determine what way, not He. He may give you the inspiration, but it'll be based on things you've done in the past that have opened up a particular channel for you. Try to tune into what His inspiration is. Use prayer as a part of your healing. It's a very important thing. Become centered in yourself. Listen for the inspiration. Listen for the guidance. And ask God, give me this particular answer. And you'll be amazed to see how He will give you that particular answer and not some other. Sometimes people wonder why. For example, many of you know about the fact that SRF and Ananda are two separate organizations, and you probably also know that there is a certain amount of misunderstanding of what we're doing, because this is something that I founded but Yogananda didn't found directly, and yet it's obviously a good thing, and it's obvious that His power is here, and we don't need to prove that point anymore. It may have had to be affirmed in the early years, but it's self-evident now. But people sometimes say, well, but if this is so, and if they are highly advanced beings, why can't they see it? The answer is perfectly simple. They haven't asked the question. That's not their particular expectation. God's not going to give you an answer that you don't ask for. If you're sitting at the piano wanting to write music, you're not going to get an inspiration for a new mathematical equation. God will work according to what you're asking of Him. Remember, it doesn't come by being a passive recipient. If you want to be a healer, then get in tune with that healing power in the universe. Get in tune with life. That's a very important part of healing. There was a woman, this is a story that Dale Carnegie told, who was commissioned at the time that they laid the Atlantic cable, commissioned to write an article on it for a magazine. And the article wasn't to be very long, about a page long. And she made a trip to England, she went to the library, she did an enormous amount of research, all to write one page. And people said to her, but why do you go through so much work when all you've got to do is write a page? And her answer was, even if I don't say a thing, the fact that I know it will give me an air of authority in what I do say. You need to know a great deal more than you're actually putting into words or putting into outward manifestation. If you want to be good at something, most people, unfortunately, don't do this. If they want to be healers, they just think in terms of, well, I've got to think of my hands, and I've got to try to send energy through my hands. But you've got to be in tune with the healing forces of the universe. That would be perfectly attuned to what I'm saying, to get out and lie in the grass and feel the grass grow. Try to feel what it is in nature. The great people in any field have gone at it in that way. They've tried to feel the whole reality behind it, this great dynamo of power that produces your little tiny flow, that little tiny bit that your body is able to give expression to. But that flow is everywhere. And the average person, and the reason so few people are really good at anything, will say, well, I only need this power on Tuesday afternoons when I heal. I only need it in my hands. I don't have to think about my ears, for heaven's sake. I only have to use my body. I don't have to think about those stupid trees. But the power that you're drawing on is the same power that is all over the universe. And if you want to get in tune with healing, then think of the generative power that produced the universe. It won't be what you're using. You're not trying to create a galaxy. But you'll be getting yourself in tune with that which ultimately can heal things and people too. Get in tune with the forces of life and keep out of your mind the destructive forces, the forces of entropy, those things that gradually tear things down. Be a person who says yes to life. Be a person who's looking for the principle behind the thing. So that when you think about the grass growing, think of growth. Don't just think of this blade of grass. Think of that power behind everything that you see. Think of the power of song that produces melody in the birds' throats. Think of the wave of energy that pours over the world when the sun rises in the east. Think of how that energy withdraws into a center when the sun sets in the west and regenerates itself so that it can come out again. You must have a cosmic view of everything that you do if you want to make it really powerful. Most people tend to think only of the little tip, and they don't think in terms of the great, vast iceberg underneath that tip. But the iceberg is what makes it possible for that little tip to show above water. And you will see that people who are really good at anything are always philosophers, always thinkers, always mystics in a way, in a very real way. In fact, this was a statement by Einstein that the sense of mystery is, and of wonder is the real secret of all great scientific discoveries. And most people who pride themselves on being scientists, and I would say that somebody like Einstein would not pride himself on being a scientist. If he would have a pride, it would be in being a human being, not in being a scientist. But those people who identify themselves to that extent with things and go around sort of boasting, I'm a scientist, are usually people too pedestrian to make any discoveries. They're usually just the lab technicians. They're able to take knowledge that other people have given them and sort of ploddingly go ahead and prove it yet once more for a classroom or whatever. In any field, the people who really accomplish things are the people who pull back from specifics and try to feel how those specifics relate to something vast, to something much greater, and try always to feel that in some way or another they are giving expression to that greater reality. Ultimately, superconsciousness and genius are both simply heightened awareness. Superconsciousness just means nothing more than total awareness. And that too is what genius is, total awareness. It may not be on as high a level as a master, of course it normally isn't, except to the extent that you can say a master is also a genius. But it is true that a person of genius is completely conscious of everything that he's doing. It's not so much what you're aware of as what you're aware with. That is to say that a person who is very aware may not be aware of specific little things, but he's able to bring total awareness to whatever it is he wants to do. Such that I was reading a book by P.G. Wodehouse recently, the British humorist, and I was struck by the fact that here this hero of the story went to his rooming house and just had a brief chat with the landlady. She was a totally unimportant person to the plot. And I was so intrigued to see that he just put his entire attention to her while he was writing about her. And she became a person. She didn't need to become a person for the purposes of his art, but it was what he was doing. He had his whole mind there. And so she had a personality and she had her quirks it was fun. But what was intriguing to me was the energy that he gave to every word that he used. And that, to me, is the hallmark of genius. You listen to a Beethoven symphony, and you find that he doesn't throw anything away. Everything he does, you can feel his whole being there. Is when he's playing that note, he means that note and nothing else. Beethoven more than most. It's just absolutely that note. Where a lesser composer, he sort of stumbles through many, hoping that you'll like one. When you heal people, it must be with that kind of faith. Faith means not just, well, here I am, God, and sure, I sure hope you're listening, and maybe you'll do something, but, well, here it goes, and then you think of something else. If you really want to help somebody, then all your energy has to go that way. And not just your energy, you've got to tune into the divine and ask the divine to use you as it will. Mind you, you're trying to bring into manifestation a power that is actually higher than your own conscious mind. And so it should be with will, but it should be done. This is a very difficult point to grasp, because you don't want to do it absent-mindedly. You don't want to do it passively. Certainly, that won't generate the energy, but you don't want to do it with self-will either. I'll tell you a story to help you to understand that point. There was a woman that I met, actually she was a girl, 19 years old, in India years ago. And she was a saint. At the age of 9, she had given her parents a note saying that from then on she was going into seclusion. And she went into her room. Now, I don't think anybody in this country would allow it, but in India, anyway, it worked. They allowed her. And they would bring her food and put it outside her door, and she would eat it, and she spent the rest of her time meditating and praying before an image of Krishna. And just, I think, about a week after I met her, she died. And they said that they had seen her in the room sitting before this image of Krishna with tears streaming down her cheeks and just in a state of ecstasy. And she just gave up her body. At the time that I saw her, she was all draped, I couldn't see. But they said that she still had the body of a 9-year-old girl. She was so pure-minded that she hadn't even gone through puberty. She was just still that innocent girl. But the story that I want to tell you is about her healing powers. She, many times, they would leave notes by her door and ask her to pray for somebody, and that person would be healed. Well, her father was very ill, had many things wrong with his body, and they repeatedly asked her to pray for her father, and she wouldn't do it. Finally, they put her in a position of saying, well, it's because he's your father, you're prejudiced, you don't want to do anything for your own family, and so on. And they put her in such a position where she had no choice, really. But she wrote them a note saying, you will see what will happen. And she prayed for him, and he became well. But not very long after that, he began living a dissolute life. What had happened was, you see, a dissolute life in the past had created that karma to be ill. And the illness acted as a brake on that dissolute past. And she was working on his spirit, and he, in his own soul, presumably, was doing the same, to change that mental tendency. But when that brake was removed prematurely, then that old tendency, which hadn't been corrected yet, the karmic pattern had been set up for the correction, but it needed to get down on deep enough levels of his own mind for him to be able to understand and really give up that old desire. And because that was removed prematurely, therefore those old tendencies came out, and he started in again on a course that would make him suffer again even worse. Remember what Jesus said after healing somebody, go and sin no more, lest a worse thing come upon you? That's the way that works. So mind you, when you try to heal people, you must understand that the real healing is of the soul. And sometimes physical problems are a very important part of growth. And sometimes a person should die. And it's not your business to try to prevent that process. It's your business at that time to try to help them to die with faith and with the consciousness of God, so that the last thought that they go with will be the thought of God. Because the last thought you have is a very important one, the important one, in determining where you go, what happens to you afterwards. So yours is not the place to say, I will that this person be healed, I want this person to be well. It's ultimately God's will, and what you need to do is always say, if it's your will. Always, in other words, try to attune yourself to the inner flow and feel what it is that you should do. And in attuning yourself to that inner flow, try to attune yourself to that other person's center. Try to feel where he's coming from and see whether it's what he, in his deeper nature, wants. Is it really the right thing for him? You'll find that you'll reach him, in that very process, you'll have reached him on a level deep enough to make the healing process work better if you're to generate it. But how to attune yourself with that? How to pray so that you can draw that power? How to pray that so that you can know whether to draw that power? All of these are vitally important to the healing process. I remember writing a letter once, and I said something in the letter that I thought might be helpful, but I wasn't sure if it would be helpful. And so I asked for guidance. Should I or should I not put this in the letter? And as soon as I asked for guidance, I felt this nervousness, sort of from the inside of my system, out through the nervous system. No, it's not right. And so I tore the letter up and rewrote it and didn't say that. I found that there is a certain kind of inner response coming from the superconscious level. And if I put my whole mind on what I'm doing, if I'm really attentive, then I can be also sensitively aware of the little currents that come. For example, yes, you may be told to heal somebody, but you go to heal them in a certain way and it may not be the right way. So if you're continually in tune, you'll come to know, no, not that way, this way. And bit by bit, you'll fine-tune your healing efforts. Or you will find that by being in tune with it, you will be in tune with that effort that will really work the best in this case, because people are not machines, and what will work well for one person won't necessarily work well for another. That's the problem that I find with almost every book that I've read or on diet and healing, that somebody makes a discovery, it worked wonderfully for him, it's worked wonderfully for a few people that he's worked with, and it's the panacea for the whole human race. Well, it needn't be. Depending on people's levels of consciousness, somebody was telling me that he knows these cowboys in southern Argentina who eat nothing but raw meat and live to be 97. Well, they probably, without having met them, and I may be wrong, but I suspect that they're rather a lower level of consciousness, and that this is the kind of vibration that they are tuned to. And so being in harmony with that, plus, of course, the very active lives they lead, that's all important. But the thing is, you mustn't be fanatical. And fanaticism comes when you start imposing something on somebody else that you think is good without listening to see what they want, what they're attuned to, what would help them. And if you try to attune yourself to the person, attune yourself to his own need, I've sure learned this in counseling, that if I will just tell somebody something that's worked for me, it may help him, but it may just as easily hurt him. If I listen to him, to what his own higher self is trying to say, if I try to attune to his own inner nature, then I find very often I'll say something that I wouldn't do, or wouldn't normally counsel, because I know it's right for him. It should certainly be something that you would do too, otherwise if you wouldn't, then you have to be honest and say, no, that's not something I would do. Otherwise, you will introduce into your counseling a certain element of untruth that will cause you to lose power. There has to be truth behind what you say. It reminds me of a story of Mahatma Gandhi. A woman came to him and asked him to tell her son not to eat so much sugar, candy. And the boy was eating too much. It was bad for him and it was causing difficulties, but he liked the stuff. Gandhi said, "Well, come back in a week." And she brought him back in a week, and he said, "You shouldn't eat so much sugar." And the woman said, "Well, you could have said that to him a week ago. Why didn't you say it to him then?" Gandhi said, "It's because I was still eating sugar myself a week ago." This is the... So if you give somebody advice, for example, I could tell somebody to to do something that I'm not involved with. I have to make it clear that I'm not involved personally. But if you do this, I think it will work. Always, whatever you say, let it be truthful. So you're not just saying to people, do as I say, not as I do. But what you do isn't the whole story. What they need is the real story. And if you will try to attune yourself to those needs, and then you will find you'll attune yourself to the healing power as it relates to those needs, then it will be surprising and wonderful to see how well these things work. Now there's another aspect to it, and that is that when you attune yourself to the superconscious and really open yourself up to it, there will be times when it will say things and do things through you that you don't really, it's not really you working at all. It just happens, like somebody needs help, and you just sort of slap him on the chest and say, you're well. And you know, what did I say that for? What happened? But the divine used you, and the person becomes well. That's how you can know that it may have been indeed that the divine was using you. Don't be afraid of that possibility, because we're really dealing, and we really want to open ourselves up to a level of consciousness as well as power that is vastly greater than we are. And whereas I don't in any way sanction things like automatic writing and being passive instruments of this power, because that's not the way the law works, nevertheless, the more by your willpower you open yourself to it, the more it will be able to use you sometimes without your expectation or even demand. Suddenly that answer's there. Suddenly that power is there. Suddenly you find yourself saying something to somebody that was exactly what he needed, and you thought, why did I say that? Doesn't that happen to you sometimes? I suspect it has. And the more you advance spiritually, the more you'll find it's happening. Treat it with respect, because your subconscious can get into the act just as easily, in fact, a lot more easily than the superconscious. But as you get into it more and more, you will find that more and more it is the superconscious starting to work through you. What is the superconscious? Total awareness. The more totally aware you are, as insofar as you are capable of being totally aware, the more an even greater awareness will start to use you for whatever you want to do. In other words, those people who think, well, I don't want to intrude my ego, I don't want to intrude my ideas, I don't want to obstruct this flow of divine inspiration, and so what I'm going to do is just sort of sit here and wait for something to happen. It doesn't happen that way. It will happen if you're so aware of whatever you do, whatever field you want to study, know it thoroughly. Know your tools. Know it. The importance is not so much in knowing your tools as in the awareness that comes from having put that much effort into knowing your tools. That once you've known the facts, once you've attuned yourself to as much as you can be aware of, then you will have opened that channel to the divine flow. And that is how the divine flow really works. Not by automatic writing, not by Ouija boards, not by just sort of going into a passive trance and so on. It comes from really opening yourself up with joy, with willpower, with faith, and trying to attune yourself to it. And the more you do it, the more something much, much greater begins to use you. Well, when you can do that, that's when this power will begin to flow better. Now, I spoke of the ego as one of the things that obstruct that power. Presumption is another. And in the healing field, I've seen more presumption than in any other. So therefore, I feel I should talk about it more strictly. The fact that you've been able to heal one person doesn't mean that now you are, in capital letters, a healer. The less you think that you are a healer, quite possibly, if you understand the way I mean this, the more you will be a healer. I don't mean this in the sense, well, I said you have to be in tune with it. In that way, convince yourself you're a healer, yes. But at the same time, the less you feel I am the causative factor, as Master wrote in Autobiography of a Yogi, that the real secret of Lahiri Mahasaya's great miracles of healing lay in that he never allowed the ego to become the causative factor. He always asked God and asked the divine to use him in whatever he did. And that's why he would always sort of try to make it seem as if it was some other cause. For example, he gave somebody castor oil. And this healed him of great illness, but it wasn't the castor oil, it was his power that did it. He used this to sort of be an instrument for it. Instruments are okay. The power behind the instrument, however, is the real thing. You, whatever you give people, and it wouldn't hurt to use things like, I would say an intriguing thing would be to work with colors, for example. Colors have a power to influence the mind. I don't think the color will do a great deal, because we're talking about the astral world, which is the astral energy is much greater than the physical color. But nevertheless, to a certain extent, color does have power. And if you wear black, it influences the mind in a depressing way, usually. If you wear bright colors, it helps to brighten the mind. But more than that, the healing power is what it does to the mind, and then the mind tunes into a more cheerful thought, and then the mind makes the body well. So to use color as a vehicle for a different state of consciousness could be helpful. Or to give somebody a crystal. Some of you have a lot of faith in crystals, and there is a certain power in the crystals. But there is also the power of the expectation of power. And that's not to be put down. The fact that you use a crystal as a focal point for your energy can be something that will help to generate what you're doing. You need to concentrate that flow.